Steve Dale's Other World on WGN, 9 minutes after 2 o'clock. I am so privileged I get to talk to some of the smartest people around. I've been doing radio for a long time. This may be one of the smartest people I've ever met and will ever talk to. His name is Dr. Niels Peterson, Distinguished Professor Emeritus at the University of California Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. And we're going to talk about the pandemic. We're going to talk about COVID-19. Why in the world would I be talking with a veterinarian about this topic? And hopefully it'll become abundantly clear to you how it is. And it begins with maybe Dr. Peterson having studied coronaviruses for decades, knows more about this topic than, well, really, just about a handful of people, maybe. No one in America. I mean, really, he knows as much as anyone else on the planet about all this. I'm kind of nervous about doing this because it's Dr. Niels Peterson. So first of all, Dr. Peterson, thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure, Steve.
All right. So I want to start here. Very basically, we've heard the term coronavirus. We know that this pandemic that causes something we're calling COVID-19, it's a coronavirus. Can you explain, without being too technical, what a coronavirus is?
Yeah, a coronavirus is the largest virus in the RNA virus group, and RNA viruses are the major group of pathogens that we deal with in animals and in humans. Coronaviruses have infected a number of species of veterinary importance for decades, and so we have avian bronchitis, which is a coronavirus that causes major disease in our poultry. We have feline coronavirus, which is a major cause of disease in our pet cats, and we have coronaviruses in dogs, and we also have coronaviruses in pigs, where they're a big problem, causing outbreaks of diarrhea, and that can be very fatal in very young piglets. So the veterinary profession has had a lot of experience dealing with coronaviruses. We've dealt with making vaccines or trying to make vaccines for them. We've dealt with quarantining them. We've dealt with determining their structure, their immune responses to them. So there was a lot of knowledge collectively in veterinary medicine prior to the problems that we're seeing now in people.
Our telephone number, 312-981-7200. You can call or you can text using that number if you have questions for Dr. Peterson. When you heard about the pandemic, sudden acute respiratory syndrome 2, which is what creates COVID-19, and it's a coronavirus, were you surprised that it took off, if you will, around the globe the way that it has?
No, not really, because this is the history of coronaviruses. They jump from one species to another periodically over time, and we've seen them jump into cattle. We've seen them jump into pigs and into poultry and into cats even in our lifetimes. And so basically it's not surprising. And also remember that we had the SARS-1 epidemic over a decade ago, and then that was followed by the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, MERS. And so fortunately for us, both of those viruses failed to humanize to an extent, and they basically were eliminated fairly easily. But everybody knew that the shoe would drop, and that there would only be a matter of time before one of these viruses jumped over into humans and, in quote, became more humanized. And once they become humanized, then you get significant transmission from person to person, and then you see the situation, or you create the situation to have a pandemic. So I think we were waiting with bated breath for this one to happen. I don't think we appreciated it would happen that fast and maybe as serious as it was. But yeah, we were expecting something.
I want to ask you about how coronaviruses change and shift and mutate. And I also want to ask you about a drug called Remdesivir. It's being used around the world to help people with moderate success, but we'll take moderate success at this point, around the world, not only in the U.S., people who have COVID-19. And I would argue, if it wasn't for this man on the telephone, Dr. Niels Petersen, I'm not sure anyone would have thought about using this drug. And it's because of work he's done in cats? How does that all tie in? We'll find out when we come back after this. We're talking with Dr. Niels Petersen, Distinguished Professor Emeritus, University of California, Davis, School of Veterinary Medicine, about COVID-19. And I mentioned Remdesivir, Dr. Petersen, a drug that is being used now to help people who have COVID-19 all over the world. And I suggested, and will again in a bit more detail, if it wasn't for an organization then called the Wynn Feline Foundation that supports funding for cat health studies, now called the Every Cat Health Foundation. And if it wasn't most especially for you, we probably wouldn't have a treatment for feline infectious peritonitis in cats. But that's another story for another time. We also wouldn't have this treatment that we now have for COVID-19.
Well, you know, I've been studying feline infectious peritonitis since 1967. You know, I started as a student in veterinary school, and I've spent my whole life studying this specific disease of cats called feline infectious peritonitis, which is a coronavirus disease that is virtually 100% fatal and kills tens of thousands of cats around the world every year. I studied this for many, many years. We tried to develop vaccines, and the vaccines weren't working, we weren't able to prevent the disease. And so finally, about 7 or 8 years ago, I decided to use some of my experience with antivirals for HIV to look for antivirals that may have activity against this coronavirus of cats. And we identified one that was under research for Ebola. And this drug was basically what's called a nucleoside analog, and it had wide activity against a number of these RNA-type viruses, of which coronavirus is one. And the people that were researching these at the time were the people in Gilead Sciences, which is a group that I had worked with in the 80s on HIV when they were first a new company working on antivirals for HIV. And so basically I contacted them and said, can we test some of your candidate drugs and see if they have activity against this cat virus? And lo and behold, we found one that did have activity. And this compound was ultimately closely related to a drug that Gilead was trying to work on for Ebola called Remdesivir. Now, Remdesivir, at the same time that we started studying it, was tested against Ebola and didn't work very well. So interest for Ebola went down, but fortunately what happened is that when we worked with this virus, with this drug for cats, we found it was extremely effective in inhibiting the coronavirus of cats, and we were able to even cure natural infections 90% of the time or more of these fatal infections, which had never been able to be treated before. And so at the same time that we had made this discovery in cats, then the COVID outbreak came along, and these drugs were tested against coronaviruses in the SARS viruses and so forth, found to have strong activity there as well. And so we knew they had activity against feline coronaviruses. And so basically then what happened is Remdesivir went off to be field tested and finally was given some limited approval for use in humans. Now, so at the same time that this was happening, we were trying to get Remdesivir, or a closely related drug to it, for use in cats, but we were denied those rights by Gilead, basically because they were afraid that something that we were going to do with cats would interfere with the approval and licensing process for Remdesivir. So we were not able to get legal approval for it, and as a result, nothing to do with me, but just because of the need worldwide, a Chinese chemical company started offering it to desperate people who were basically rescue people into cat rescue, foster rescue groups who had a big problem with FIP. But to make a long story short, for two years or more before Remdesivir was even approved for even limited use in humans, it was being used all over the world to cure cats of FIP, although in an unapproved form. So this was kind of interesting that we had 2 years of field experience with this drug before it was even approved for COVID in humans.
And if it wasn't for you and your work with cats, not only wouldn't now we're talking about millions of cat lives being saved, although we still need approval for the drug just like Remdesivir in the United States. We're also talking about human lives, because I don't know that anyone would have thought about this drug that wasn't in the front burner, that's called Remdesivir, if it wasn't for the work that you have been doing over the years. And now you must feel good because so many lives have been saved as a result of this drug that you did initial work on in cats. And while cats aren't people, it turns out to work. What do you think, so all of these variants have happened. Is that what coronaviruses do?
Yeah, they mutate continually. We studied... This is well known, for instance, with the coronaviruses that cause diarrhea in piglets, and it's also well known with the coronaviruses that cause avian bronchitis in poultry, in our poultry population. We know that they're continually mutating, and I think the most interesting comparison is with avian bronchitis in our poultry flocks. You know, we've been vaccinating against that disease for decades, and what we found is, or what people have found, is that the virus is continually mutating, so they have to keep changing the vaccine every year sometimes, or every several years. They have to change the vaccine to whatever the new type is that's out there, and so it's this continual process. Now, we also know from our experience with the common cold viruses, people don't realize that there are four species of coronavirus that cause common colds in people, and we've known about those for decades. And some recent studies on one of those, one of the major cold viruses, a virus called 229E, shows that over time, people the virus is continually mutating. And so that antibodies that are created in 1 year are not as effective 10 years down the road, which means that the virus is continually mutating. As we develop antibodies to one strain, then a new strain evolves, and then we develop antibodies to that, and another strain evolves. And so we know that this is a normal pattern for the common cold coronaviruses. We know it's a common pattern for avian bronchitis virus and for the swine viruses. And we have the same evidence with the coronaviruses of cats that cause FIP. They're continually mutating, not only mutating internally, but they're also doing what's called recombining, where they'll jump into another species that has its own coronavirus. And then that virus will recombine. Let's say a bat virus jumps into a cat. This is theoretical, but if it jumps into cats and then it alters itself a little to adapt to the cat, and then it jumps back into the bat population. But in the process, it's collected some of the genes from the cat virus. So this is well known. We know this with bovine coronavirus.
Dr. Peterson, yep. I'm interrupting you because I wonder if, and I've suggested this on the air, actually, and at the time I was told, no, by a scientist, but I still believe, so I'll ask you, could that be exactly what happened with Omicron? And maybe it was a mouse, but whatever species it was, it recombined, did exactly what you said, and is coming back to us. Also, same question, or different question at the same time, could this actually be good news because we're all getting Omicron, it seems? Could there be community immunity now?
Yeah, well, first of all, let me say that the history of all of these pandemics with these various RNA viruses, whether they're flu virus or whatever virus that you're talking about, these RNA viruses, is they when they jump into a species and cause these little pandemics, that they ultimately do what we call it humanize. They mutate to become more and more infectious for humans. But in the process, they usually lose virulence. So the expectation of all of these viruses that jump into a new species is that their worst is at first, and then they evolve to adapt to humans and not cause much disease, because in a quirky sense, it's to their advantage not to get people sick, but to infect them quietly. And so we were waiting for this to happen with COVID. And it looks like it's now happening. We jump from alpha, beta, gamma, then delta, and it didn't look very hopeful. But now this big jump to Omicron is shown that we now have a virus that's highly transmissible, that's taken precedence over the existing previous strains, and it isn't very pathogenic. It's still more pathogenic than the common cold, but it's a lot less pathogenic based on what the South Africans are finding than the previous isolates. And so basically there is some evidence now. First of all, Omicron has over 50 mutations already that are in addition to the original mutations found in the original isolates of the COVID-19 virus. And the number of mutations is so great that people are questioning whether they happen through just normal evolution in humans, that maybe what happened is the Delta virus jumped in. One theory is that it jumped into a mouse, and then it picked up certain genes, certain changes in the mouse, recombined with the mouse coronaviruses and picked up certain mutations, and then jumped back into humans as Omicron. So that's one of the newer theories to explain how a virus can suddenly develop so many new mutations beyond what was seen before with alpha, beta, delta, gamma viruses.
Dr. Peterson, so, yeah, Dr. Peterson, I'm jumping in there only because we're out of time. I could spend hours with you. You're amazing. Thank you very much for being here, because I know you don't do a lot of these. Distinguished Professor Emeritus, University of California, Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, thank you so much, not only for the information you've just given us, but for helping so many humans, so many animals over the years. Thank you, Dr. Peterson.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Steve.